The following program is made possible with support from the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Twameva Mata cha Pita Twameva Twameva Bandhu cha Sakha Twameva Twameva Vidya Drahinam Twameva Twameva Sarvam Mama Deva Deva.
See, one thing the West may not have understood about the Eastern concept of entertainment, especially in cinema, is that the average audience in India is below the poverty line. When that person goes to the box office and buys a ticket, and that to him is worth a lot of money because he's going probably with his family, he's going with his mother, his sister, his brother, children and wife. With that dollar he spends on the cinema for his family, he wants everything. He wants the works. Now, before going to the film, he may have heard Lata Mangeshkar's song. He may have heard that in the restaurant he sits in and has a cup of tea. Or when he goes to buy a paan, a betel nut, he may have heard a song coming again and again with that identifiable voice of Lata Mangeshkar, which he adores. Then he finds out which film it is. And then, only then, does he go to the cinema.
Passages to India, a series created by Julian Crandall Hollick. The Indian film industry is the largest in the world. Over 800 new films every year and over 11 million filmgoers every day of the year. It's the dominant cultural form in today's India, retelling the past, interpreting the present, and creating new myths and dreams for millions, many uneducated and uprooted from their past. Our program is called In Search of Film Wallahs.
Late afternoon in the market town of Madhubani in Bihar in northern India. An endless flow of bullocks, bicycles, and men and women shuffling to and from the countryside, the work done. If you want to advertise something in the countryside, send someone with a rattle drum and a megaphone. This man's been sent by the local cinema owner, Mr. Sahu, to advertise tonight's film at the Pratica Cinema. He shouts the cast, the times, and a special offer for this evening only. Two seats for the price of one. And so, of course, we'll go. The Pratica Cinemas are a small concrete shoebox of a theatre near the marketplace. It's 6:30. The main film doesn't start for another hour, but already there's a line for tickets.
We have six tickets, please.
Six tickets?
Yeah.
Best
seat. How much ticket is this?
₹4.50. We're blocking the queue.
Mr. Sahu, the theatre manager, sees us standing outside. We're probably the first non-Indians ever to visit his cinema. He unlocks the gates and ushers us into his office, where we try to make polite conversation without either of us ever really understanding what the other is saying. On a shelf sits an illuminated portrait of Krishna. In the projection room are two very ancient movie projectors made in Toledo, Ohio, during the Second World War. Stacked beside them is a huge pile of metal cans. Hindi movies are much longer than ours, usually 16 reels, well over 3 hours. Mr. Sahu assures me they have a generator, if and when the electricity fails, which it often does. Mr. Sahu sees us to our seats in the front row of the balcony. At the time, this seemed a sensible place to sit. But just in front of us are spittoons. And throughout the 3 hours of the main feature, a steady stream of panchuas gets up and comes to spit out red betel nut juice. Some miss and hit those in the stalls below. The lights dim. The bell and howl projectors creak once more into action. And the show begins with 45 minutes of trailers and commercials advertising a lifestyle that's totally and utterly outside the reach of this audience, but not outside their imaginations. And then the movie begins. A type of movie unlike any other. To the eyes of the professional critic, hopelessly lowbrow. Sounds and looks like the Hollywood of the 50s. But by now we all know that appearances in India are invariably deceptive. Once again, India has borrowed and mixed many ingredients into something uniquely and fundamentally homegrown. For most Indians, in fact, for much of the developing world, the Hindi movie is his cinema, a welcome escape from the harsh realities of daily survival. And it's a cinema that goes way, way back.
The first films were shown in Bombay in a place called Watson's Hotel in 1896, the year the Lumiere brothers were showing films practically all over the world. And there's evidence that short films were made within a year or two of that.
Chidananda Dasgupta, one of India's leading film critics.
Well, the dimensions are mind-boggling, as a matter of fact. India has been the top producer of films for nearly 10 years now. It nevertheless is an urban phenomenon, mainly centered around the 3,000 odd towns we have in the country. In that context, 15 million people a day can be considered quite sizable.
There are masses of statistics. 100 million movie tickets sold every week, $60 billion in receipts every year, 5,000 touring theatres travelling year-round from village to village, 40,000 buses specially equipped with video players, 200,000 video parlours where you can rent a movie, a minimum of 800 films produced every year, more than three times as many as Hollywood. India itself is basically theatre in the round. The Hindi movie's a celluloid remake. Noisy, fantastic, full of unlikely melodrama and farce, and ultimately exhilarating and exhausting. You need the stamina of an ox and the bladder of a camel to sit through 16 reels. Up to independence in 1947, the Indian cinema was essentially middle class and full of the earnest ideas for self-improvement of the Mahatma and Nehru. Gandhi's favorite film was Ram Raja. Gandhi used to say that Ram Raja, the kingdom of Ram, represented his vision of India. But was he leading his fellow countrymen towards it or back to it? No one could ever be quite sure. But after independence, all this changed.
The cinema began to turn itself towards the working class, the emergent classes of people who had more money than education. And the cinema became a sort of battleground of ideas. The popular cinema increasingly, from the 60s onwards, began to represent the traditionalist element in the Indian mind.
The popular cinema still turned out films based on the epics and the Puranas. Some directors, the late Raj Kapoor was the most conspicuous example, made hugely popular films that were still grounded in some of the contemporary problems afflicting the average Indian. But by the late 50s, a formula had been discovered that attracted vast audiences and never seemed to lose its hold on the cinema-going public. The popular Hindi movies often been dismissed as nothing more than an Indian version of post-war Hollywood. Highly ritualized melodramas, obligatory song and dance routines between scenes, a hefty dose of comedy to diffuse tensions, and over-stylized emotions. But these also have a clear link to Indian classical and folk dramas going way back in time. They're familiar forms, easy to grasp for villagers who suddenly find themselves uprooted from the countryside and forced to look for work in the big city. The whole thing's a wonderful stew, appropriately enough called masala.
Masala means spice. So a masala film is a spicy film.
And what are the ingredients?
The ingredients are standard. The ingredients are sex, which includes rape, violence, which includes violence with guns, karat, and so forth. Then cabarets, dances, lots of songs, and some tear-jerking scenes, and some dramatic scenes of conflict.
Inqilab, revolution. Starring Amitabh Bachchan, Sridevi, Kader Khan.
Our hero Amarnath is a policeman in the anti-smuggling unit. His father-in-law, however, is a smuggler. Amarnath kills a man to protect father-in-law. Our hero's wife is virtuous and leaves him. Cut to scene two. Our hero resigns from the police force to avoid further investigation. But the public misinterprets this. They think he's resigned out of disgust because the police are corrupt. Unscrupulous powers in the underworld now see a chance to exploit this celebrity for their own ends. They put up our hero as leader of a new party that sweeps the state polls. The virtuous wife hates him even more for the hypocrisy of his speeches. Amarnath, the leader of the Poor People's Party.
What the hell is going on?
But he wins in a landslide. He comes to the Raj Bhavan as chief minister to choose a cabinet. He enters the room to find every crook and smuggler waiting for him to confirm them as ministers. They have drawn up the cabinet list and expect him to be a mere puppet. He takes each one in turn. The man who sells adulterated food is to become minister of food supplies. The man who dilutes drugs is to become minister of health. He reaches into his briefcase and takes out an Uzi submachine gun.
You bloody blackmailers! You bloody blackmailers!
He assembles it in front of the fascinated assemblage of crooks, pimps and smugglers and then turns it on them one by one. Rat-a-tat-tat-ta.
Ye teri chal ke naam.
His wife will do her duty and rid the state of this hypocrite. She takes his pistol and goes to the government office. She comes across a room of slaughter, but cannot shoot him. I'm proud of you because you came to kill me, but let justice take its course. I will give myself up to the police.
I'm sorry, sir.
Our hero strides out, asks his former colleagues to place the handcuffs on him, and then before he's taken away, addresses the assembled crowd of the downtrodden and dispossessed come to install their man in power. I was rotten, I sinned, but I have reformed because of you and this woman. Long live the revolution! The people will triumph.
Like many movies today, masala movies exude sex. But the big difference is that no physical lovemaking, even kissing, is usually allowed to be shown on the screen. Everything is by erotic suggestion. Lovers bite out of the same apple. Shapely heroines absent-mindedly fall into rivers, walk under waterfalls, or just somehow get plain soaking wet and then emerge, diaphanous sari clinging to every curve of the female body, leaving little to the male imagination.
This becomes unbearable after a while because it has an arousal effect. So the moment there is the danger of it exploding, you burst into song. Song or dance or both. You start rolling down a hill or you wrap yourself up in a telephone cable. Having diffused the tension, you put in a little bit of drama, a little bit of religion, a little bit of mother-son kind of tear-jerking dialogue and what have you, then you go back to the sexual issue and build it up once more. And then again it reaches its peak, and again there is a song or a dance.
The omnipresence of songs has thrown up another uniquely Indian phenomenon, the playback singer. Film stars rarely sing themselves. They usually lip-sync in the most unlikely situations to a pre-recorded song. Playback singing is pretty much a closed shop. For the past 40 years, it's been dominated by two sisters, Asha Bhosle and Lata Mangeshkar. They began as teenagers and have never stopped. At last count, Lata Mangeshkar had recorded over 50,000 songs. In almost every film made in Bombay or Madras, whatever the situation, whoever the star, it's the voice of Lata Mangeshkar or Asha Bhosle you'll hear. It's rarely India's pop music, a typically Indian masala of every known musical style under the sun, from rock and rumba to classical khayal and rag. I suppose you could say that India invented MTV a generation or more before the West.
टाइपराइटर टिप 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 करता है जिंदगी की हर कहानी लिखता है
टाइपराइटर टिप 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 करता है जिंदगी की हर कहानी लिखता है
टाइपराइटर टिप 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 टिप
People would come sometimes only for the songs. You know, they were not interested in the story or in the fight or the performances. They just come in, watch those few numbers and go out.
That's Shashi Kapoor. Although Shashi has starred in many films made in the West, including Heat and Dust and Sammy and Rosie Get Laid, in India he's perhaps best known for acting in the tearjerkers produced by his elder brother, Raj Kapoor.
I released a film as a distributor. It was called Bobby. My brother had produced and directed it. And it was a very simple love story between a rich fisherman's daughter and a rich man's son. And what happens to them. But it had lovely music.
जब से देखा मैंने तुझको मुझको शायरी आ गई
It was a delight, visual delight too, all those numbers. It had something like 10 or 12 numbers. And people, we gave a trophy to a few members of the audience in Delhi who had been seeing the film every day. Sitting in one particular chair after work, they would come, sit down, see for a little while, go away. And we asked them, we said, what was it that made you come day after day for a year? And they said, it was the joy of your eyes and the joy of your ears.
Do any of you ever manage to go to the cinema?
हाँ कुछ लोग उसमें जाते भी हैं कुछ लोग नहीं भी जाते हैं जैसा जाते
लोग नहीं जाते they go to the cinemas.
A movie ticket costs less than a quarter, within the reach of almost everyone, including this group of women who make their homes on the pavements in Baikala district in the heart of Bombay.
And you watch all these Amitabh Bachchan films and things like that. Why do you like them?
उसका एक्टिंग अच्छा लगता है.
We like him because he acts very well.
Do you like the songs?
उसका गाना पसंद है. Yes.
इसी वजह से हम लोग जाते
हैं. Amitabh Bachchan, the heartthrob of these women, has dominated Hindi movies for the past 15 years. A tall, dark, brooding actor, Bachchan is the son of a distinguished poet and a friend since childhood of Rajiv Gandhi.
Mind you, he's a legend and he's a phenomenon. I mean, no other Indian star has ever reached the heights that he has from every point of view, from the audience point of view, from acting point of view, from the salary point of view and everything.
Amitabh's friend and fellow actor Shashi Kapoor. What Bachchan brought to Indian cinema was a smouldering physical sulkiness and a new social type, an Indian cross between Clint Eastwood and James Dean.
The whole trend in cinema changed. It actually began with the angry young man who was fighting against society, who was fighting against evil, who was fighting against politicians, who was fighting against the system, and who was representing the common man, you know, the coolie or the rickshaw driver or the taxi driver.
The late Smita Patel, one of India's finest actresses, starred with Bachchan in several Hindi movies.
The man who was always hanging around the street corners and had no identity, suddenly he was given an identity on the silver screen.
Amitabh Bachchan has been many things to different audiences. The alienated son redeemed by the power of a mother's love. The angry young man who takes the law into his own hands against corruption and social injustice. Or the latter-day reincarnation of Vishnu come to rid the world of evil. Like other Indian movie actors before him, Bachchan hoped to translate box office into political office. Film star, politician, god. Or is it god, politician, film star? But Bachchan turned out to be an indifferent politician and resigned under a cloud to try and pick up his faltering film career. But there have been others in South India who've built tremendous political careers on their film roles. The most successful current example is the Chief Minister of Andhra Pradesh, Rama Rao.
In something like 292 films, the vast majority of those, that is, N.T. Rama Rao plays some god or the other from Hindu mythology.
And is that what helps get him elected?
That established his godhood, his divinity, in the minds of people beyond question.
Chidananda Das Gupta. The other great actor turned god turned politician was the late M.G. Ramchandran of Tamil Nadu, known everywhere as MGR. How MGR became a politician tells you a lot about the interweaving of the cinema and Hinduism in every facet of Indian life.
He was used by politicians to project the image of a particular party.
Albert Johnson, a Tamil Christian, has charted MGR's political career. MGR was originally recruited as an actor by the DMK or Dravidian People's Party in the mid-60s. In those days, MGR was not a great, even a good speaker.
But then, when a person, you know, acts as a hero in a film, naturally he gets a following. And he, I would say, he was a very calculating type. Because if you look at the roles which he has been playing in all the films, he has been very choosy, very systematic. He has carefully planned, I think, his whole life, I would say. Because he goes to the rescue of a damsel in distress, and he doesn't smoke, he doesn't drink, doesn't have any vice. So an image is created as if that he is somebody who is perfect.
MGR never had a regular political party machine to sustain him in power. He simply used his network of fan clubs to turn out the votes.
And these fan clubs which were created, thousands of them. In almost every village there was a fan club. In every town there are numerous fan clubs. And you know, they were just, they would die for this man.
And it really is true. The man in the street treated MGR as a god. To test this, we asked Sondra Rajan, a waiter at a restaurant in Madre, what he thought of MGR.
I've seen the films of MGR, how he helps the poor in his films. For a matter of fact, he has played the roles of Tolilali, a laborer, and he has also played the role of a handcart puller, and he also has a rickshawala. So these kind of characters attracted me so much.
And does MGR, as the politician, do the same sorts of things as these characters?
சிறு தொழில் செய்கிறவருக்கு ஏழைகளுக்கு உதவுகிறார்
இந்த
மாதிரி பல இதெல்லாம்
So what all he said in the films, and he's doing that. Like, he is giving money to unemployed graduates. He gives dole for them. And he also gives bank loans for the poor people to start any small-scale industry or cottage industries. So he does all the things what he said in the films.
இப்போதைக்கு அவர் தெய்வத்துக்கு ஒப்பானவர் சார்
எப்படி இப்போதைக்கு தெய்வத்துக்கு ஒப்பானவர்னா எதனால
இந்த வியாதியிலிருந்து குணமடைந்தார் பார்த்தீங்களா
சரி
இந்த இதிலிருந்து அவர் தெய்வ செயல் தான் சார்
Of course, I would say MGR is definitely a reincarnation of some god. Because recently he had this severe setback in his health. Now he's completely all right. He regained his health. An ordinary human being cannot have some kind of recovery. So I must say he is equal to a god.
Then pandichi mayile therodum vediyile maan pola vandavane yaradittaro
The success of MGR points up something else. Many Indians don't speak or understand Hindi. So from the start, there have always been regional language films made in the South and the East. In fact, more films are produced in Telugu, the language of the southern state of Andhra Pradesh, than in any other language. Hindi films account for just 20% of total All India production.
Those regional films reflect the regional customs, regional habits, regional dress, and differentiate themselves from the All India film, which tries to obliterate those differences and make the product acceptable to all parts of the country at the same time.
Now, most of the films you do are in Tamil?
Mostly in Tamil, but I've done a few Malayalam and Telugu films.
Madras, like Bombay, is basically a film-crazy city. Y.G. Mahendra is one of the Tamil cinema's leading comic actors.
In Tamil Nadu, you'll find the masses going mainly to Tamil films. Andhra, they go to Telugu films. Karnataka, Kannada films and things like that. Hindi films, you'll find a select audience from each class going to that, those who know Hindi. And some of them who don't know Hindi, they go to see the glamour of Hindi, because you know Hindi films are much costlier than our regional films.
In Western movie making, I'd guess it's normal for a star to make at most one or two films at a time. In India, nothing of the sort.
So how many films do you do simultaneously?
Here the system is we work at about 6 or 7 movies at the same time. That's how we make our money.
I mean, you must be working 24 hours a day or something close
almost.
To
almost. We do about 2 or 3 shifts a day.
What, 4-hour shifts?
No. 2 shifts mainly, 8-hour shifts. But it depends on the work, you know, like me. My work doesn't probably go on for the full 8 hours. It gets over in about 3-4 hours. Then I go on to the next call sheet, as we call it.
And Y.G. Mahendra is fairly abstemious. 6 or 7 movies at the same time's child's play. In 1988, two popular stars, Govinda and Mithun Chakravorty, made 51 films each, sometimes working on 5 sets in one day. But this is how film stars make their money, and lots of it. Hugely enjoyable as some of the mainstream masala movies are, they don't usually reflect the elements of change in India. The values underlying masala movies are traditional and static. The long-suffering mother, the sacrosanct family, social stereotypes in celluloid.
I have a phrase for it. It mythologizes the present. It creates a new mythology out of the present and marries it with the past mythology. It no longer presents the past mythology in itself.
I suppose in India's case it was simply easier to offer escapism to the toiling masses than earnest black and white exhortations to build the nation, as Nehru and Gandhi would have wished. If you want films that try to look at India as it really is, then you must look at the so-called parallel cinema.
It's true to say that it also emerged as a reaction to the mainstream cinema, which is a commercial cinema, which means a cinema geared entirely and only to make profit at any cost.
Govind Nahalani made his reputation as a cameraman before branching out into directing such parallel films as Ad Satya or Half Truth, which takes a merciless look at police corruption.
But also, like any other form of art, serious cinema in this country, what we call parallel cinema, emerged also as a process of evolution of our society after independence.
There have always been directors trying to make serious films in India. But the man who put Indian cinema on the map was Satyajit Roy. In 1956, Roy's first film, Pata Panchali, The Song of the Road, won the special prize at the Cannes Film Festival. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that Satyajit Roy is one of the greatest living filmmakers. At his best, there's a lightness of touch, an ability to say much with very little, a lyricism and a humanism that only a handful of other Indian directors have achieved. But Roy is much more than just a film director. He's perhaps the natural successor to the great Bengali polymath, Rabindranath Tagore. Roy writes the music for his films. He designs the sets and costumes. He also writes children's books and does the illustrations as well. Roy's films often reflect the clash between tradition and change. Invariably, they're set deep within Bengal and its culture, often retelling Tagore's stories in more contemporary settings. Throughout the 50s and 60s, Roy was virtually the only well-known parallel cinema director. And then in 1969, the so-called Hindi New Wave began, with Mrilal Sen's Bhuvan Shom, a satire about a petty bureaucrat, and Basu Chatterjee's Sara Akash, about a young man forced to marry against his will by his family. Simple themes, easy to understand, very much part of everyday life, which were both entertaining and low budget. In 1975, the parallel cinema got a great boost when Mrs. Gandhi declared a state of emergency and suspended the constitution.
Emergency, according to me, is a very important stage in the evolution of our cinema. Important because for the first time, the population of this nation went through a kind of political maturity in 2 years of emergency, like it had not achieved that kind of maturity in the last 30 years. Suddenly, even the common man became aware that there are certain fundamental rights which were being denied to him.
The parallel cinema is very much a director's medium. Its subject matter reflects individual interests. Caste tensions, dowry and arranged marriages, bonded labour, prostitution, police corruption, the tensions between modernization and traditional India, and the condition of women. Many of these themes were crystallized in Shyam Benegal's Ankur, his first feature film made in 1974.
Surya, immature, pompous, and weak, is sent to manage his father's farm. He angers the lower castes, ordering them to stop washing in a pool on his land. Surya is already married, but his bride is still a child and will not join him until she comes of age. Lakshmi is Surya's housekeeper. She is a lower caste woman who lives across the rice field with her deaf-mute husband Kishtaya. Kishtaya's fond, too fond of palm toddy. One day, he's caught tapping the palm trees on Surya's land for the precious alcohol. Surya shaves Kishtaya's head and banishes him from the village, but not before he ties him backward on a donkey and parades him through the village, a traditional form of humiliation for petty criminals. Surya is now free to seduce Lakshmi, and he quickly takes her to his bed. Lakshmi moves into the main house. But the trysting ends as Surya's wife arrives and quickly senses that Surya and Lakshmi are lovers. Lakshmi is fired and sent away from the house. Jobless, husbandless, and now pregnant with Surya's child, she looks to her lover for help. he does nothing. Lakshmi returns to the hut she shared with Kishtaya. One morning, she awakes to find him asleep beside her. Kishtaya has reformed and brought her money he's earned. He's overjoyed to discover that Lakshmi is expecting a child. Touched by his tenderness, Lakshmi realizes she truly loves Kishtaya.
It's a beautiful morning. Lakshmi hangs her sari on the roof of the hut to dry. Across the fields, Surya and a young boy are flying a kite. Kishtaya comes out of the hut, gesturing towards the main house. I'm going to go and see if there's any work I can do over there. He sets out in his finest dhoti, swinging a walking stick, a shawl thrown across his shoulders. He is proud and happy, a father-to-be. Surya becomes agitated. Why is this man coming here? Does he know what I've done to his wife? Hurry, take the kite. Quick, take the kite. He hands the string to the boy and turns quickly towards the house. As Kishtaya enters the courtyard, Surya yells, Malika, Ramayal, Pochat, seize him! He rushes into his house to grab his whip and then begins to beat Kishtaya fiercely. You bastard, you've come here to attack me, haven't you? The small boy with the kite backs away. The servants recoil in horror and disgust. You dare to come here? I won't spare you today like the time you stole from me. The screams and blows carry across the field. Lakshmi comes out of the hut, puzzled and apprehensive. In the distance, she sees her lover beating her husband to death. She gathers her sari and stumbles across the field. You dare threaten me? I gave you work and you stole from me, you bastard. You ran away. Now you come here to show your filthy face? I'll show you who's master around here. You'll remember this day the rest of your life. Half dead, Kishtaya somehow stands, doubled over in pain. Lakshmi reaches him as he falls unconscious. She covers him from the blows. Surya, frightened and ashamed, runs back into his house and bolts the door, seeking shelter from Lakshmi's anger. The poor dumb man came to ask you for work, and you beat him, you coward! You don't dare tell the truth and face your wife, so you try and kill my husband? May you rot in hell! You may do what you like in your house, but we're not your slaves. We don't want your money, your work. Take it to your grave, you bastard. God will punish you for this. Lakshmi gently helps Kishtaya to his feet. Slowly they stumble back across the field. Later that morning, the little boy who has witnessed it all comes up close to Surya's house. He bends down and picks up a rock. He throws it through the window and runs off down the path. The first seedling of rebellion has been planted.
It was the turn of the 70s that the new cinema emerged, and emerged strongly as women's cinema. You know, they dealt with women as Indian women have been, not as Indian women per se, how they appeared through the eyes and attitudes and concepts of an Indian man.
The late Smita Patel. For 10 years, Smita Patel symbolized a new type of Indian woman, intelligent, independent, beautiful. And in the end, she was deeply discouraged because nothing had changed.
You make a film that has to be accepted by the audience. So you give them what they want. And they see what they want to see.
And they don't want to see women as they really are.
No, they don't. I mean, let's face it, I have faced it, that films don't change lives. They can reflect, but in a country where tradition is so strongly imposed upon you for the sake of having peaceful living, you know, just day-to-day life, and where are no choices for a man as well for a woman, you know, where the society is so closed, it has so many counter influences, films don't really change lives.
Great hopes were placed on this new cinema, hopes by and large unfulfilled. Some directors such as Shyam Benegal have been able to find commercial distributors. But most new cinema films have languished unseen. There's never been an effective way of distributing them. And by and large, the Indian movie-going public wants escapism, not a bracing cold shower of realism. And then, in the nick of time, has come television. For a veteran director like Mrinal Sen, the small screen is not something to scoff at.
And the television is also very helpful that way. If you show your film first to the television channel, and the television channel, well, you get good money.
And that's not the only bonus that television has brought the parallel cinema. Film director Shyam Benegal.
People get to see Malayalam films and Kannada films which they never otherwise would have seen all over this country, all over this country.
But the money you get from Doordarshan is much less than you get.
It is much less, but it is developing an audience for the films. So you are going back into another process of pioneering.
Not everyone's so enthusiastic. Govind Nalani recently made a powerful series for Doordarshan called Tamash, about the reality of India just before partition in 1947. He thinks television means the ultimate death of independent filmmaking. His colleague Syed Mirza, who's also been making sitcoms for Doordarshan, is equally pessimistic.
It was tough in the beginning to get the finance. It's going to be tough later. It's going to be tough in the future. That I know. Well, it doesn't mean I give up. You know, it doesn't mean that at all. You just go on making the kind of film that you want to make, you believe in making, and hope like hell that you get the finances for it.
Until last year, these villagers in Pasawi on the Deccan Plateau used to go into the local town to watch movies once a week. Then someone had a brainstorm. They pooled their money and bought a television set and a VCR, and then built a communal TV hut. So Saturday evenings are now spent in Pasawi. The rooms packed with farmers watching the black and white set at one end of the hut. This spells double disaster for the Bombay film industry. There are still only 7 million television sets in India. But thanks to these communal sets, TV is now seen by over 600 million Indians.
I want a lot more out of everything in life, including my shampoo. That's why I use Ponds.
Choose from egg, beauty, lemon, tonic, herbal, whatever your kind of hair. Give it extra lava flair.
When they're not watching state-run TV, Indians are renting videotapes of their favourite films from one of over 200,000 video parlours. TV and the VCR are literally killing the Bombay film industry. Indians are a very resourceful lot, and pirated or bootleg tapes are not only impossible to control, but have become a huge business. YG Mahendra told me this pirating has reached extraordinary lengths.
Even on the day of the release of a new movie, I'm able to get the video copy immediately. So that does restrict the collections at the theatre, unless the picture is exceptionally good.
Almost 800 films were made last year, but little more than 100 were ever released, and only 20 of those made money. 250 films are simply waiting in cans for someone to buy and distribute them.
We want justice! 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 We want justice!
Things got so bad that in October 1986, the whole Bombay film industry shut down and went out on strike. It wasn't just video pirating. The producers said they couldn't make a profit. The taxes were strangling the industry. They forgot to mention they were already writing their profit into the budget. They also forgot to mention that most of them could afford to lose money on films, because film financing has become the classic way to launder so-called black money, earnings from drugs, prostitution or smuggling. Black money goes a long way to explaining why few seem worried about the bottom line, and how film stars can become millionaires on salaries of no more than $50,000 a year. Leela Naidu, one of the country's most respected and respectable actresses, remembers her first encounter with black money.
And do you know, when I started acting, they used to come, "Madam G, how much will you want?" I said, "Where's the script?" He said, "Madam G, how much will you want?" So I said, "Please, you know, where's the script?" He said, then I said, "You pay me by check, whether it's 75,000 rupees or 1 lakh." He said, "Madam G, it's costing us too much." I said, "I'm costing you too much." He said, "In black, we'll give you 250,000 rupees, but you're asking us for white money. We don't have it."
The Bombay film studios seem like relics from a bygone age, dinosaurs of the cinema left over from a previous world. When you walk through the iron gates of Hindustan film studios, you enter a little make-believe world. Old buildings, old streets, run down yet bustling with filmy activity. Men carrying props, men carrying food, men and women in costumes, gaffers, technicians, all the myriad armies that make up this subculture. Downtown, the stars are being woken like the gods, washed, dressed and fed, and then transported in Mercedes or Maruti to the first of several film sets they will grace that day. Regiments of wall fans keep the set bearable. On stage, a handful of rather muscular dancers in Roman togas practice a few desultory moves, then slouch off to flop into canvas director's chairs like animals in the noonday sun. In one corner sits the sound recordist. On a little table, an old mono tape recorder with the playback song for the dancers. From time to time, perhaps to remind everyone that he's still around, he presses the on button, and 20 seconds of chorus blares around the set. The dancers don't even pay attention. Futile. Everybody's waiting for the great man, Manoj Kumar, director and star. He finally staggers in, dressed in a navy blue jogging suit, dark glasses pushed back from his forehead. He slumps wearily into the director's chair, tries to focus on me, with a puzzled stare. Is this a masala movie? The answer's unprintable. Masala is not a word he wants to hear. Another tap. Do you ever make a profit on your films?
Nature is still kind to me. I do not know if I make a profit. I simply try to make honest films and let God provide. Honesty is my watchword. The day I become dishonest to my work, I'll give up my profession. I can't cheat my country. I can't cheat my profession. I can't cheat my colleagues. I can't cheat my audience, because it's the audience which feeds us. Filmmaking is clearly a serious business.
Well, we mustn't detain you. You've got a scene to shoot here. You know?
The formal interview's over. Everyone stumbles outside to a little square plot of grass in between sets. A couple of brave trees survive in this little patch of green. Manoj Kumar, assorted cameramen and helpers, camp themselves on the small patch of grass. We stand respectfully to one side. And then Anita Raj appears from a small dressing room. She's dressed in pink and white, heavily made up, demure and pretty. Manoj wants a reaction shot from Anita. At eye level in the trunk of one of the trees, a helper carves a heart and initials. The tree is scarred with previous efforts. But he finds a piece of vacant bark and starts carving. Manoj lines the camera up. The light and the shadow falling across Anita's face means moving the heart an inch nearer the camera. the helper sets to work. But clearly, carving initials in trees is not one of his strengths. Manoj impatiently takes the knife and does it himself. Cameras roll. Manoj calls for action. Anita steps shyly and demurely forward and discovers her initials along with those of her admirer on the tree. Manoj talks her through every gesture. She feigns shock, flushes. A solitary tear slips out of her eyelid and falls slowly and tantalizingly down her powdered cheek. But Manoj is not satisfied. The scene, complete with tear, is repeated 5 or 6 times until Anita's face finally registers the full emotion of her heart. Has Anita Raj finally got it right? Everyone heads back inside, where the sound man is still valiantly trying to get someone to pay attention to him.
Search of Filmwallahs was written and produced by Julian Crandall-Hollick and Dean Capello. The recording assistants in India were Rana Behel, Raja Chatterjee and Raj Shekharan. Pradeep Krishan was the actor. The theme music was composed and performed by Shubha Shankaran. Consultants for this program were Meera Rehm Binford of Quinnipiac College and David Lelifeld of Columbia University. For more information about cassette copies of this series, please phone 1-800-854-TAPE during regular business hours. Passages to India is a production of IBA, Independent Broadcasting Associates, and is made possible with major grants from the National Endowment for the Humanities and the Rockefeller Foundation. Support for the national distribution of this program is provided by this and other national public radio member stations, and by the NPR Cultural Program Fund. Contributors include the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation and the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund, connecting artists and communities worldwide. I'm Deepika Roy. This is NPR, National Public Radio.